Hey everyone, it's Keely here. Welcome back to Exit on the Left. We left off last week, moments after my dad hung up on my boss while I was in the hospital. Today I'm going to take a little detour to talk about car dealership jargon, the stuff that makes your head spin when you step onto a lot. Well, I'm going to aim to break it down in a way that actually makes sense. Think of this as your backstage pass to the real conversations happening on the car lot. I'll be sharing stories, some funny, some frustrating, so that the next time you walk into a dealership, you won't just feel informed, you'll feel in control. The real value of your trade-in. Let's start with a term that salespeople often assume that people understand. ACV, or actual cash value. Sounds official, doesn't it? Like some magical number dictated by the car gods. But really, ACV is just the amount a dealership is willing to pay you for your trade-in. They arrive at this number by reviewing a few key things. Based on market trends, such as, is it about to be winter and you're trading in a sports car with summer tires? Probably not going to get top dollar in Saskatchewan, but perhaps your family needs new room immediately. So it becomes a time to weigh what your priorities are. They also do some research into what similar cars are selling for in your market. Your car's kilometers, condition, what the dealership figures they would need their profit margin to be, providing a number that you'll likely agree to. But here's the kicker. They also subtract a few things you can't see. And in the age of full disclosure, this is one that most customers don't know. Lot pack fees. A safety net for the dealership in case your car has hidden issues or if they need to adjust the pricing at some point due to it sitting in inventory for longer than they anticipated. This is typically a $500 to $1,000 of padding that is included in every single deal, trade-in or not. Not only is it money that is not going towards your trade-in, but also it is not being calculated to pay out that salesperson who has been diligently working to earn your business. It goes into a pot or a pack that sits through the year as a fictitious bank or crash pad for the pre-owned sales department. In case something gets missed, someone wants tires thrown in, or a vehicle has been rotting in inventory and they need to sell it below cost, this fund allows them to at least break even, dipping into it and adjusting the numbers as needed. Now, let me tell you a story that a friend told me on a call this week. A direct, no-bullshit kind of guy, he was transparent with the salesperson who had found him the ideal ride he was looking for. He told me, hey, I gave them my bottom dollar on my trade, the absolute lowest I'd take, and would have been more so along the lines of what I would have let it go to, like, a friend or a neighbor. And unsurprisingly, they gave him exactly that. Not a penny more. But here's where it deviates from the norm and gets shady. The salesperson personally bought his trade-in from the dealership, then flipped it on Facebook Marketplace and made a 75% profit in just a few days. It's one thing to quote-unquote steal a trade and have a good priced piece of inventory, but every now and again there's a dealership that will turn a blind eye to what is referred to as curbing, which is taking the vehicle for quick cash outside the confines and regulations of the dealership. As much as a dealership may seem like the bad guys, sometimes private sales can be even worse. At least a business has obligation to follow laws, requirements, the Consumer Protections Act that keep them in line if they try to step a toe into muddy waters. But some dealerships pretend not to see this happening at all, especially if a used car manager or GM is getting a little piece of the action on the side, which I've witnessed firsthand, but more on that down the road. We'll save that for further down the main storyline. This is why knowing your car's value and keeping certain numbers to yourself is so important. All right, let's talk about another thing that shocks people. Reconditioning fees. Reconditioning fees cover things like basic detailing, standard inspections, fixes like oil change, brakes, worn tires, and anticipated problems. because some vehicles are notorious for certain issues, and the dealerships know that a headache is likely inevitable. For example, if a car is known to have CV joint failure at 150K, even if yours hasn't failed yet, the dealership might knock off $500 just in case it's faulty sooner rather than later. And then there are the deep cleans. You'd be amazed at what people leave behind in their cars. Spilled drinks, years of fast food wrappers, cigarette burns. I once saw a car come in with so much dog hair that it looked like a werewolf had been shedding inside. That car needed a full steam clean, deionizer, and a biohazard level detailing, which was something we sent out rather than having our own staff do, which of course is another thing that may be factored into your trade-in value. So yeah, reconditioning costs add up. The as-is sale, a lesson in communication. Now let's talk about when a dealership says that they are selling a car as-is. I once sold a vehicle to a father-daughter duo. It had 145K on it, was a few years old, and I made damn sure they understood there was no warranty. I even had my manager reinforce it. If you're worried about mechanical stuff, you shouldn't be buying this car. They agreed, the deal was done. Then, 2 days later, the mom shows up, and she is furious. Apparently, her daughter's car is having issues. She's yelling, calling me a criminal, saying I scammed her daughter, that I was a bitch, demanding a refund. But here's the thing. Her daughter was an adult. She made a decision. Everything was disclosed. Legally, even morally, I had done nothing wrong. So I let her finish and then calmly said, "Your daughter is about my age, right?" She nods. Okay. Imagine someone walked into her workplace and screamed at her the way you're doing to me right now. Would you think that's okay? Or would you be really upset and want to protect her from that? She took a deep breath, realized she was attacking the wrong person, and said she would have her daughter contact me to decide what she wanted to do to remedy things. Now, my used car manager had no interest in jumping through any additional hoops, so he simplified the process. Took the vehicle back, refunded the customer in full. At the end of the day, the average dealership isn't making enough profit on a standard car deal for it to be worth having to fork out a bunch of repairs that aren't covered under warranty. It's a large part of the reason that most inventory on a car lot is new enough that one can finance it and purchase an extended warranty if it doesn't have factory warranty remaining. The truth is, people get emotional when it comes to big purchases. I get that. But clear communication is key. Whether you're buying or selling, make sure you know exactly what you're signing up for, and if in doubt, ask for more information. The be back bus, the psychology of I'll be back. If you've ever walked into a dealership and said, "I'll be back," let me let you in on a little secret. Salespeople know that you are just trying not to be awkward or impolite. The be back bus is the industry term for customers who say they'll return but never do. The funny thing is, most people aren't trying to be dishonest. They just don't feel comfortable saying no to people, or would rather not be bothered with follow-up phone calls. Newer salespeople tend to take it at face value, some even penciling into their calendar or appointment list. "Oh yeah, he said he'd be back tomorrow." Meanwhile, the experienced ones, they just smile, nod, because they know the be back bus rarely stops here. I was pragmatic. I knew that there were times that they likely would just go down the street to the next dealer and buy elsewhere, but sometimes they meant what they said. And the next day, I was happily surprised to see some of them walk across the showroom. I'd rather seem positive and naive than pressure someone into something they're unsure about. One of my strangest negotiations? A guy traded goose jerky as part of his deal. Yep. He was a hunter and said, "I'll bring you a year's worth of dried goose jerky if you make this work for me." And for almost a year, that man delivered. Tasted good, but let's just say not everyone's stomach agreed with it. What's coming next? That's a wrap for today's episode. Hopefully you're walking away with some insider knowledge and maybe a laugh or two. next episode, Double D's, Double Deals, where I talk about shady holiday deals and Jenna Jameson. Ugh. The holidays were filled with high-stakes finance moves, and for the first time at Christmas, I was flush with cash. So I did what any self-respecting 19-year-old would do and bought my mom a Pomeranian puppy and my dad a Daunier leather jacket, of course. Thanks for tuning in to Exit on the Left. Keep your reels turning and feel free to reach out via comment, email, or sending me a message with anything you'd like me to discuss in future episodes. Also, if you are or were in the car business and you've got your own tale to tell, reach out. I'd love to hear it. Perhaps even have you as a guest on the show. I may even have a couple people lined up already. Talk to you next time.